Investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. David Twitchell, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomena. We have a return guest today in Mr. Stephen Bassett. Mr. Bassett is a leading advocate for ending the 65-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He is a political activist, lobbyist, a commentator, and columnist. He is executive director of the Paradigm Research Group and the Extraterrestrial Phenomenon Political Action Committee, or XPEC, and executive producer of the X Conference held annually in Washington, D.C. His work has been extensively covered by the mainstream media. Mr. Bassett organized the 2013 Citizens Hearing on Disclosure, where distinguished researchers, activists, and military and political witnesses representing 10 countries gave testimony in Washington, D.C. to 6 former members of the United States Congress and 1 former senator. Mr. Bassett will soon take the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure to Capitol Hill and press for immediate congressional hearings. So let's welcome Mr. Stephen Bassett to the show and learn more about that. Hello, Mr. Bassett.
It's good to be with you again.
Yes, indeed.
How are you today?
I'm fine, just fine.
Good. So, you hosted the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure, and I have talked that up on several occasions on this show, but now you're planning the Congressional Hearing Initiative set for November. Tell our listeners about that.
The game plan is fairly serious. We held the first, I guess you could say, mock congressional hearing for the ET issue ever. And there hasn't been a congressional hearing, a real congressional hearing,
right,
since 1968.
Right.
We nailed a one-day event that was 3 witnesses and a few reports. And that was 45 years ago. I mean, goodness.
Mm.
So we held this mock hearing in order to introduce to the political media the quality of the witnesses and to show them testifying before former members of Congress exactly the way they would testify if there were real hearings to be held.
Okay.
This had never been done before. It was very difficult to do, and it cost, to do it properly, $700,000.
Wow.
Because we brought 42 witnesses in from 10 countries, including, in many cases, their spouse, because this is a full week. It's an historical event. We're not going to ask them to leave their wife or their husband behind.
Right.
We had, of course, volunteer staff. We had a shooting team that shot the whole thing in high def. We had a webcast team. We rented the ballroom for 5 full days and nights. I think we put about $100,000 into the press club alone, the National Press Club. But it was worth it because the record of this hearing, this citizen hearing, may very well be the ticket that finally gets the first congressional hearings of a much more extensive type since 1968. There are several hundred witnesses ready to testify. We could probably end up doing the top 25, maybe 30 witnesses. And if the witnesses that we would clearly wish to have there do, in fact, testify before Congress under oath, we believe the truth embargo, the policy of not acknowledging this extraterrestrial presence, will probably end fairly soon thereafter. So what's at stake here is nothing less than the most profound event in human history.
Okay, now that was the congressional hearing. Citizens' hearing on disclosure. But are we talking now about the upcoming congressional hearing initiative?
We are, and that's okay. What I was saying, that on November the 5th, we'll announce it ahead of time, but it'll basically, there's going to be plenty of PR ahead of time, but essentially on November the 5th, the day after the election,
okay,
535, 10 DVD sets, which hold the entire record of the citizen hearing from April 29, May 3, 2013, will arrive on Capitol Hill. That's 5,390 DVDs. We'll hit the 539 offices, which hold about 10,000 staffers.
Yeah.
All right. And media campaign will be launched about 6 days before those DVDs hit the offices, the day after the election, and that will be designed to ensure that staffers within those offices are going to open up those DVD boxes and look at some of that material. Then shortly after that, I will be approaching these offices for meetings to discuss that material and the need for hearings immediately for the witnesses that are ready to testify, military, agency, political witnesses. Well, and that campaign will go on from November the 5th through the end of January with the idea that we'll get the hearings sometime in those first 90 days. And that will be it. I mean, once those hearings get underway, assuming that the president waits that long, we think the president will be forced to disclose ET presence, though he will certainly have to meet with and cut a deal. Somebody will have to meet with the Pentagon and cut a deal with the Pentagon in order to have the necessary arrangement and satisfy the national security concerns. But the truth and brother would probably be over. So that's what's happening. And it's going to start for about 90 days.
Well, you've approached congressional members, in fact, Congress before, trying to get hearings, open hearings, and that kind of hit a brick wall. I realize that there's an awful lot going on in the world other than the extraterrestrial phenomenon, but still, come on, this is the biggest story in history. In human history, I mean, why wouldn't they, you know?
There have been many attempts to get hearings in the last 20 years, and they've all been blocked, cold.
Yeah.
And the reason is simple. Particularly since 92, those inside the government, clearly inside the classified military intelligence world, that are dealing with this issue, managing this issue, are pretty much aware that if the hearings that we wish to hold, and we will settle for nothing less, were to take place, the truth embargo would end. And so they were not ready for that to happen, and so they blocked hearings. As you go back in time, the likelihood of getting hearings got worse and worse. I mean, it was not going to happen before the end of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. After the Cold War, the possibilities were there. There have been a number of attempts to get them all blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So what's different this time, David, is that we have the citizen hearing on disclosure DVD video record, which shows these witnesses actually testifying in a hearing-like setting, two former members of Congress who had 80 years of experience in the Congress. And these are pretty good people. We've got a lot of, less than satisfactory members of the House and Senate right now, but these six, I think, were pretty upper tier. They serve well. 80 years of experience, and many of the members in Congress know them. I mean, they're colleagues of them. And so what we have done for the first time ever is provide a way for the staff and the chief aide and, of course, the congressional member to see exactly how the hearings would go, what they would be like, how the testimony would be, how members handled that testimony, how the audience reacted. I can assure you that once those hearings have been either announced or underway, that the president is going to be put in a position where he is going to have to make a decision very quickly, get with the Pentagon, probably private meetings, whatever, to cut the necessary arrangements, cut the deal that will allow the president to step forward and announce the ET presence. Because the truth embargo will not be able to sustain citizen hearings.
Okay.
I mean, congressional hearings.
Congressional
hearings.
Okay.
And let me mention, as we were recording the call, we've had a drop call, couple of drop calls, and this has been happening just within the last 10 days. As we've gotten closer and closer to launching the congressional hearing initiative, which is now definitely set for November 5th, and I put it out to a lot of people, my huge, huge mail list, and I haven't put out press releases, but it's definitely out there. It's on the web. It's on Facebook. I've expected, you know, some sort of activity, some sort of response in a sense. There's been nothing draconian, nothing concerning. However, about 10 days ago, I've got people that are calling me. I have Verizon 4G, top-of-the-line service. They're calling me. The calls don't come through two or three times. Then they'll call me, particularly one person I work with a lot, and that they can hear me. I can't hear them. I'm getting drop calls, and I'm pretty sure I know why. They've executed. Because I don't think they have it on all the time. I'm not hiding anything from the government. I never have. But I think they instituted another cell phone tap. And cell phone taps are not like hard landline taps where you hook right into a wire near where you're going. But they're having to connect into your cell stream. And I think it messes up the connections. It causes the dual connection not to take, and you've got one person to hear, the other one can't. It causes drop calls, things like that. So I think they're following me closely right now, and I expected that. I'm not shocked at all by that.
Did this happen? Did this happen before the hearing on disclosure?
Yeah, it could have. It was so intense that I wouldn't have noticed it. I mean, there was just so much going on. I wasn't keeping track of that.
But you do notice
there was another possible response to this, which I noted with great interest, which I think your listeners are going to appreciate. Early this year, I made a firm announcement that we were going to ship the DVDs out and launch the Congressional Hearing Initiative on March 31. As it happened, there were a lot of problems. And as of March 31, it just wasn't going to happen. So that evening, I sent out a update to my very large list that didn't put out a press release, but an update that we would have to delay it until later in the summer. Now, that's no big deal, except this is really cool. 36 hours, barely 36 hours after I had sent that email out, but well before he would have known about this, it just wouldn't have gotten to him. Plus, it was already the appearance was already booked before that. President Clinton guested on Late Night with Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, right.
And walked out, sat down. Jimmy asked him a few questions, and then hits him with a question about extraterrestrials. Now, what your listeners need to understand is that, one, nobody goes out and sits and down on one of those talk shows without vetting completely with the producers what is going to be said generally and what questions are going to be asked.
Okay.
It just isn't done. Right. And if you're the former president, I guarantee you it isn't done. In other words, President Clinton is not going to walk out there, sit down, and then, you know, Jimmy just ask him anything he wants. Like, you know, have you talked to Monica Lewinsky later? It ain't going to happen.
Right.
And so he was asked this extraterrestrial question because he asked to be asked that question.
Is that right? How do you know that?
I don't. All I know is from my experience with talk shows.
Yeah.
That if he was, if that question was asked, he either asked to be asked it, or they wanted to ask him and he agreed to it.
He agreed to it, yeah, okay.
But I suspect he asked, and I'll tell you why. You see, the Clintons are fully aware that the congressional citizen hearing, rather, the citizen hearing record, the 30 hours, that's on the DVD set, includes testimony about them.
Mm-hmm.
About Bill, about Hillary, about Leon Panetta, John Podesta.
Right.
And the Rockefeller Initiative that went on for 3 years. This has been out there for years, but they knew that, and it was on its way to Capitol Hill. And the whole Rockefeller Initiative that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton have never acknowledged even happened, so we have the documents proving it all, never spoke to it, was about to be delivered to every congressional office. And he, well, obviously they couldn't stop it, and so he was inoculating himself here. In other words, once that got up there, he could say that, well, I've spoken about it publicly. I mentioned that we looked into Roswell, we looked into Area 51. In fact, everything he said in that interview with Kimmel is not true. He missed. Stated at all, but I know why he did that, and so that it would make it a little easier to deal with any questions or media stuff that emerged out of that delivery of those DVDs. In other words, I viewed that interview, which is an extraordinary coincidence. I mean, what is the likelihood that within 36 hours of when DVDs of a mock congressional hearing on ET stuff is about to be shipped, that the former president happens to turn up on a late-night talk show like he's out there all the time? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So I view this as a response by the Clintons to what is going on. And if I have a cell phone tap underway right now, I view that as a response.
No.
But let me be clear.
But it's kind of... it's
nothing.
Go ahead. I was going to say, it's kind of like the Vatican coming out with, yeah, sure, they're extraterrestrials. They're all God's children, yada, yada, yada. Because the handwriting's on the wall. They can see the handwriting on the wall that one way or the other, whether our government discloses it or ET discloses it, it's going to get disclosed. And people are finding out all by themselves. And when that happens, the church can come back and say, well, yeah, remember we told you we knew about that. We weren't keeping anything from you. Do you see it kind of a connection there?
Oh, yeah. In the case of the church, though, that is the Vatican's response to the overall disclosure process, which is moving forward and ultimately leads to the truth embargo ending. Mm. And they're inoculating themselves against to mitigate their standing once the announcement is made. So they don't look like they have been too much a part of the suppression of the issue.
Right.
They look at the head of the game,
right.
which could serve them well in a post-disclosure period in terms of how people view the Catholic Church and whether the Catholic Church can be actually enhanced. In a post-disclosure time.
Right.
But I'm talking about direct response to the congressional hearing initiative itself.
Okay.
I believe the Clinton appearance was one such response. I'm looking for others. But the thing I want your listeners to know quite clearly is that there has been nothing that's happened that I view as an effort by the government to prevent this congressional initiative from taking place. Wow.
I need to take just a couple seconds here just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Stephen Bassett. He's got had the citizen hearing on disclosure, and now the Congressional Hearing Initiative, which is coming up soon in November, hopefully. And we were talking earlier, you mentioned earlier about now, once this happens, the president has to, is going to be forced to tip his hand about the extraterrestrial presence. If the president doesn't know, you know, and I think I really think he's out of the loop, how's he going to come forward with it?
First of all, I believe the president, as is the case with most of the very smart people and top advisors in the executive branch, know there's an ET present.
Okay, but like Carter and Clinton, they both tried to get to the bottom of this. And they
were talking about two different things here, David.
Okay, go ahead.
I believe that Carter knew. I believe that Clinton knew. I believe that Podesta. They know there's an ET present. That is not the same thing as having been briefed by the Pentagon and the CIA or whoever is involved with this issue on all of the history and the details or being given tours of facilities, underground labs, or even the bodies of ETs.
Right.
That's not the same thing. You don't have to have a briefing by the CIA to know the ETs are here. All you got to do is go review the evidence that's been amassed in the public domain since 1947. So point one is I believe that Obama knows. The issue, does he have the ability to announce it to the public? And no, he doesn't. Because you're quite right. The management of this issue has been pulled completely out from under the executive branch and the congressional branch of government because they don't trust them.
Well, it's
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's like in the case of Carter and Clinton, they were told you don't have a need to know. Now, they didn't laugh it off and say, no, we put it in the category of Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. They said you don't have a right. You have no need to know. Well, no
exactly
need to
right.
Know
they were blocked. Both Clinton and Clinton. The Rockefeller Initiative went on for about 3 years, off and on, and so Clinton was trying, but he was blocked in a lot of ways. A lot of the attacks against the Clintons, and this of course is not you can't find this in the public domain. You can't find this in the mainstream news.
All right.
But I'm pretty sort of confident that part of the reason for the extraordinary number of attacks on the Clinton administration were due to the fact that he was potentially going to announce ET presence. He was going to end the embargo under the, at the request of and in support of Lawrence Rockefeller's initiative, which Rockefeller was, of course, a friend of the Clintons and a very powerful man, billionaire. As far as Carter was concerned, Carter, of course, was president during the Cold War. There was no way they were going to let Carter somehow end up opening up that
can of worms,
bottle of champagne, 47, Roswell 47.
Right.
So he was blocked pretty much. He got a study underway. They kind of allowed it to play out a little bit, wrapped it up. You're right, but that was the Cold War. Now, there is so much happening that is undermining the truth embargo. They're running out of time. So you may say, okay, they're going to do something. The trouble right now is our government is so dysfunctional that it's too much to ask them to fix a bridge or secure a border, let alone proceed with the most profound event in human history. And so they're sort of tied up in knots. That's where the activists come in. Your job is to untie the knots and allow them to do their thing. And what that is that we need to create a situation, and we're going to, where the media will be virtually primed to dive into the swimming pool, I mean full bore, and go into what people often refer to media feeding frenzy. And with that expectation looming over them, the Pentagon, the appropriate person, a person in the Pentagon, will, we believe, be forced to meet with a representative of the White House and agree to the terms of disclosure. That's the way to think of it. The terms of disclosure. What does the Pentagon need? What does the president need? So that both sides feel comfortable with not so much the announcement per se, but what happens in the immediate aftermath of that announcement. That deal has not been struck. That meeting has not been held, certainly in the modern era, maybe under the Eisenhower administration.
So all
the movement right now is trying to do, and PRG is trying to do, is to create that situation. The media has fallen short on this issue. It could have pretty much ended the truth embargo any time it wanted to, but it has chosen to take a middle position. It writes lots of stories, most of them pretty straight news stories about what's going on, phenomena, thousands of them, as a matter of fact, but it never investigates. It never follows up. It doesn't.
No, well, that's the government. That's not really their job, I should think, except for in case like investigative reporter.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on that, David. The media's job as the fourth estate is to not only report what's going on, right, which is fine, but also to or rather to report what they're told, talking points, press releases, whatever the government puts out, but also to report on anything that is newsworthy and important to the American people that they're aware of, but they are not being told. And so if the White House under Nixon has got a plumber's group going and they're breaking into Democratic headquarters and psychiatrist offices and have an enemies list, the White House is not going to give them a press release on that or a talking points bulletin, but once they learned about it, they went into investigatory mode in order to report that news.
Right.
And that's happened many times, and that is absolutely essential to the preservation of our republic. That's why they call it the Fourth Estate, as opposed to just some news guys. So they have not done that here, but... Right. That is their job. That is their nature. And there's great rewards to the journalistic community when they do that. They win Pulitzer Prizes. They get new readers. They make more money. And so we have, or they have before them, the greatest news story in history, which they have not yet taken up.
Right.
But we're going to provide them the motivation and the circumstances where it becomes irresistible. And once they take it up, in other words, they go, look, we're going to do what we're going to do, and I don't care what you, Mr. President, or what you, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, or you, Director of the CIA, think about that. And once they go to that mode, the President and the Pentagon will have a limited amount of time to cut a deal and disclose before it starts raining really very tough questions, and nobody will win if that happens.
Yeah, we need more George Knapps, investigative reporters. That
absolutely, we could use a lot more George Knapps, a lot more Seymour Hersh's, a lot more Glenn Greenwald. We need reporters that can't be bought, that are willing to take risks, and are prepared to challenge every aspect of institutional government at every level. We don't have it. We are, from the standpoint of investigative reporting, we're like a 1,000-manned carrier trying to operate with a crew of 10. So guess what? It's not going well.
Yeah, that's right.
But believe me, that can change. And my job as an activist is to see to it that it does.
So what, if any, positive steps have been taken as a result of the first citizens hearing on disclosure? Did any of these former congressional members or the senator go to their friends who are sitting in Congress and say, look, I was a skeptic, or I was sitting on the fence before, but after hearing all of this testimony, this at least, if I'm not a true believer, at least should be looked into?
First of all, they weren't asked to do that, because that's a whole other level of commitment. They were asked to just come in and do what they had done before.
Right, but do you know of any
in committee?
Do you know of any that did that?
Again, they weren't asked, and I'm not aware that any of them did. Now, it's possible they may have privately. But there's been no, how would you say, I've gotten no calls from some congressperson saying, the reason I'm calling you is so-and-so talk to me. Because I don't think they would. Even if they had talked to them, they wouldn't have. Not in an election year, and not in a political environment like this. And I didn't really want them to. I wanted them to do their job and be available to assist when the time comes. And I will be going back to them, but I will go back to them when what I'll be asking them to do fits nicely into the process underway and is appropriate, so they will not be either embarrassed or in any way harmed by their participation. So, but I can assure you, they all wanted to be more supportive. They discussed what they might do, and I think a number of them will be there for us a little bit down the line. I think you're going to have some other former members of Congress joining them in some down the line help, but that is down the line. Probably not until mid-November will I be assembling that. But and that's just part of this congressional hearing initiative. Look, this will be the most comprehensive effort ever to get hearings on this issue.
All right. Well, it sounds like it. Yeah. I think the hearing on disclosure, citizen hearing on disclosure, was really outside of the Disclosure Project, and I think even more so above and beyond the Disclosure Project, the most positive step taken to get this news out there. But you know, once you can't just say, okay, these people who see UFOs, flying saucers, and claim to be abducted, you know, they're not insane, this is true, and don't ask us any more questions. This isn't going to happen. You know?
Oh, Lord, they're not only not insane, they're retired former SAC-based officers with high-level national security clearance testifying.
Right.
I mean, it's so beyond, you know, are they nuts or are they not? I mean, that's old truth embargo nonsense from the early days.
Right, but that...
We're way past that.
Right, well, a lot of people... yes and no. Okay, we're more, the citizenry is more accepting now, I think, than I think the polls show that at least 50% believe we're being visited.
Well, yeah, but I was saying something more than that, dude.
Okay.
What I was trying to say is that the vast majority of the press that have had any exposure to this know full well that these witnesses are very strong. They're not sitting up there thinking as much of tinfoil hats. Not at all. That's not the issue anymore. The issue is they're still not prepared to follow up on the testimony of these people.
Right.
It doesn't mean that one oddball member of the journalistic community might say some stupid tinfoil hat comment. I'm just saying that, believe me, this issue is far more advanced than people really know, because most of the change in thinking on it is still sequestered. It isn't public yet.
Right?
In other words, it's, you know, people have experiences in their life where their worldview is dramatically changed by events, but they may not talk about that for years.
Right.
But the change has already happened. So we are in that kind of a situation now. So which is one of the reasons why once we hit critical mass on this, once the press crosses the line, it will move like a forest fire. You know, it's like what we're trying to do is we've put a lot of kindling together. There's been a long 67-year truth drought. And when we set that fire, it's going to be like a raging forest fire. You know, right. The kind that just raises its head and you can't put it out. It's going to be like that.
Yeah, I have noticed, and I've done editorials on the fact that mainstream media is less and less, shall we say, has the giggle factor when it comes to this phenomenon.
Yes.
Okay. And I've got to hand it to them. I mean, yeah, like you say, there's still a few reporters that'll laugh it off, but they're becoming the minority, and most reporters will just tell the story as what they know of it and mm-hmm. leave it at that. Leave it to the reader or the viewers. A discretion as to what to do with that information. And
there's a reason. One of the reasons for that, David, is it's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that maybe people don't think about, but I do, and that is this, that up until not that long ago, you had, for many decades, 50s, 60s, 70s, most of the 80s, really doesn't change until cable news comes online. CNN was like a major breakthrough. But for most of the second half of the 20th century, people had three news networks. Mm-hmm. I say three networks, rather, that had a bit of news on at night.
Right.
And they had their big daily newspaper, a couple maybe in some cities. And if the nightly news did some news piece that was just absolutely terrible, all you could do was send a letter to the network, who would immediately ignore it. Or if the newspaper ran an article that was just awful, you could send a letter to the editor, but they get hundreds and hundreds of them every day, and the chances are it would never get printed. And if it did, they'd print a little excerpt. That was it. Mm. However, starting in mid-90s, that started to change. And by the year 2000, here was the news situation. All of the network news operations, both networks and cable, also had online websites where articles were published. In many cases, they're published on the web as well as in the print, or they're published on the web as well as on their television show. And, of course, the newspapers all have their own websites where the articles are published. And it's very important to their ability to maintain viewers and to draw traffic that they allow comments. Mm. And so a whole new dynamic emerged in which you publish an article and you don't get some letters in the mail that you can ignore. You get 1,000 comments tacked on to the end of the article that's published right there, where you got a whole lot of people calling your paper and your journalist, your reporter, complete idiot. And so essentially the public now has a very powerful way to demonstrate their displeasure with bad journalism.
Right.
And this is not trivial. Now, they can stop this by simply not allowing comments. And there are a number of magazines and papers out there that print articles, and they do not allow comments. And one of the reasons they don't is because they don't want people pointing out to everybody else how awful that particular article is. Now, this feedback mechanism is not that old. It's 10, 15 years tops, but it's already starting to alter the way news operations, magazines, newspapers work, and they're being held accountable.
Right.
And I can give you a perfect example of this. I mean, this is classic. and may be unprecedented in the history of the ET phenomenon going back to the 1940s. The citizen hearing began on April 29, 2013, and ended on May 3. The New York Daily News sent a reporter down on May 29. He came in. He found the two most odd people in the entire room. Only two like there. Only two. Everybody else was, you might as well have been in a Senate hearing room. They had crystals on their head, and they said they were from the inner earth, whatever. He interviews them. He then writes up a hit piece. It's just all nonsense, all crap. He has pictures of these people. It's just a complete hit piece, and they publish it the next day.
Wow.
Well, when we learned about this, Roscoe Bartlett, former Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, was so mad that he actually excoriated the news right there on camera and on webcast. But they started getting a lot of negative comments about the article on the website.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of negative comments. And so guess what happened?
Tell me.
They sent the same reporter back Thursday night. And he did another article that was perfectly clean. Very nice. Got it right. Had pictures of all of the committee members. No nonsense. That was, I do not know of that ever happening before. To me, that was a milestone event. They realized, they found out pretty quickly that that first article, which is really circa 1969, was just a complete non sequitur, and it made the New York Daily News and the entire editorial staff look like idiots.
Yeah.
And so they straightened up.
I see.
I think that's a milestone, and that's just the beginning. Believe me, with 50% of the people privately believing the ET issue is real, and they're right, that represents about 150 million adults in the United States. The potential for getting massive negative comments on any stupid ET pieces is increasing with every single day.
Right.
And so unless they want to anger their readers, they want to drive them away and lose even more business, they're going to have to start treating the issue the way it's supposed to be treated. And that's just another reason why the truth embargo's days are numbered.
Right. I'm going to have to take a few more seconds just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, here in Dearborn, Michigan, out of Henry Ford College. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and once again, we're speaking with activist Stephen Bassett. Stephen, we're kind of running out of time here, but let's briefly go through these. You've suggested a new lexicon when it comes to the UFO phenomena, and let's take them one at a time. And the term UFO, some people have suggested that UFOs are, go ahead.
It's time to go. It needs to exit the building.
Okay.
It won't be easy, but it's an anachronistic non sequitur.
Mm-hmm.
It's a truth embargo term used heavily promoted by the government, meaning whatever you think you're seeing, it's unidentified.
Right.
The thing can land on top of your house, right? And an ET could get out and take you for a ride around the solar. It's an unidentified flying object. So it's simply got to go. Now, I'm not suggesting that it is going to disappear tomorrow, and I'm not going to condemn any organization from using it. Mm-hmm. But it's not an unidentified flying object. It is an extraterrestrial craft or vehicle.
And some have suggested
that's what it is.
Some have suggested that UFOs refer to unconventional flying objects. Is that
even more stupid?
Why?
I mean, forget it. Don't even think about it.
Okay.
They're no longer unidentified. No, that doesn't mean that something unidentified can't turn up in the sky. So somebody throws a pie pan out the dorm window, I guess, for a brief period there, you got an unidentified flying object. I can assure you that's not what thousands of people have been studying for 6.5 decades.
But unconventional...
So UFO needs to go.
Unconventional means not made on this earth.
No, unconventional could just mean it's weird.
Oh.
No. It's an ex... Again, there's no need to hedge our bets here. There's no need to dance around the truth.
Mm.
But that's what the propagandists want you to do. That's why propaganda is about creating terminology that serves the propagandist,
mm-hmm.
not the people. So to the extent that, and I understand there's a lot of syllables here. I mean, I know that. Extraterrestrial is not the easiest word to pronounce or to spell, and I appreciate that. And unfortunately, the term alien, which is much easier,
mm-hmm.
I'm also recommending we avoid that. It has got too much baggage. It has got, it's used in too many contexts, and it's overly negative. So I don't like alien. That leaves us pretty much with extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
But, the truth deserves a little effort. So that's just a couple of examples. Yeah, I think you have some more.
I had ufologists, but that pretty much has been covered with UFO, right?
Extraterrestrial research. I'm sorry. Extraterrestrial phenomena researcher.
Researcher, right. The term cover-up.
Mm. This is important. I started really working to get that term changed back in the late 1990s. Everybody knows what cover-up is.
Mm.
It is a... conspiracy to hide illegal activity.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep a surprise birthday party from your husband,
mm-hmm.
that is not a cover-up. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If you try to hide the fact that you're running a meth lab out of your garage, that's a cover-up.
I would think so.
A cover-up is the hiding of illegal activity. The decision to embargo the ET issue in the late 1940s, early 50s, was a national security decision
mm-hmm.
made for very legal reasons, and therefore it wasn't a cover-up, and the people involved were not criminals. And so I prefer and encourage people to use the term truth embargo because we do not need to criminalize or anger or demean people in the government who we would like to have on our side, who we would like to have support the truth process.
Right, right. The term abductee or experiencer.
Hmm. In the contact world, it's been also difficult. Obviously, this is new territory for the English language by and large. And it hasn't settled out yet, and there's a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, well, so what? I mean, if you're a researcher, maybe you don't care. An activist cares because terminology is very important to getting across a message, the message you need to get across to the institutions that need to change your policy.
Mm-hmm.
I am encouraging people to simplify here. We need an umbrella term for everybody having contact with extraterrestrials, however that contact is taking place. And the word contactee is the one. It's the only one that makes, it's the only one that works. It is not a negative term per se. It's not intrinsically negative. Contact was the name of a very popular, very successful movie. Everybody knows what contact means in that context.
Mm-hmm.
So contactee, the overall term. Now, within the umbrella, under the umbrella term, are terms which are we can attempt to distinguish types of contact. Now, one of the terms that is heavily used and not going to go away, and we can stick with it, is abductee.
Mm-hmm.
Abductee means someone who is having forced, uninvited physical contact with extraterrestrials.
Mm.
So that's one group. Now, we don't have a term for people that are having non-forced physical contact, meaning they're inviting them in or they occasionally engage these people, but it's not It's not considered inappropriate. It's like somebody, like a neighbor dropping in on you. You didn't invite them, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. You sit in the porch and talk, whatever. There isn't a term for that.
Okay.
So I just say, okay, contactee. Just put it under the general term. And you have people that are having non-physical contact, mm-hmm. involving, in many cases, most likely telepathic communication, because the ETs are virtually all, as far as we know, telepathic.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call that? Well, telepathic contact.
Mm-hmm.
Non-physical contact. Right? The term experiencer was a term that John Mack tried to introduce in order to solve this semantic problem,
mm-hmm.
But it didn't take, and I don't think it works. Mm-hmm. It's just not clear.
Mm-hmm.
An experiencer, anybody that experiences something is an experiencer.
Right.
There's just nowhere to hook.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's out, and that's all I've got right now. But I think the most important thing is we need an overall term for everyone having ET contact of any kind. And contactee, I believe, is the term.
Okay, putting the phenomenon itself in the category of the paranormal.
Mm. Yes, this is another semantic issue. Paranormal is it's not an intention to discredit or even ridicule, but I think the human race now, our science is far enough along, and our knowledge base is great enough now, and there's enough thinking and enough human activity that is simply, that is operating with no superstitious component, that it's time to recognize once and for all that there is nothing paranormal in the universe, period. That the universe is what it is, and it is all normal.
All normal. Yeah.
There are things going on which we don't understand, and generally many of those things get lumped under the phrase paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Now you say, okay, what's wrong with that? Well, the problem here is that bucket has got a very disparate group of things in it. So ghosts, for instance, is paranormal, right? Poltergeist events, where things move, paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Near-death experience, a lot of people would consider paranormal. I think that's going to change. Mm-hmm. And so when you put the extraterrestrial issue into the paranormal bucket, you're essentially saying, well, it's out of the ordinary, or it's not normal, just like ghosts are. No, just, not at all.
Just outside.
In fact, it's pretty clear now from the research that's being done and just the galactic census that's being taken that the presence of life and civilizations throughout the galaxy is so normal, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
So again, I would prefer that the entire ET subject be taken out of the paranormal bucket. And frankly, in general, I think people need to start. They should limit very, very limiting what they put in that bucket. It should be as small as possible because the universe is normal. It is what it is.
Mm.
Just because you don't understand something somehow doesn't make it woo-woo-woo-woo-y.
No.
Right? There was a time we didn't understand quantum mechanics. Does that mean that the nature of the smallest particles was paranormal?
Mm.
Of course not.
Just outside of our knowledge of the normal, right?
Outside what we have high confidence in. And now this is, I understand, 100, 200, 300 years ago, I mean, this idea was not going to fly. And this is 2014. We've been to the moon. We've got spacecraft exiting the solar system. We've mapped the human genome.
Mm.
Time for us to go, it's trying to get a little more sophisticated about how we see the reality around
us. Okay. Let's go with cattle mutilations. The late W.C. Levengood more accurately suggested the term be animal excisions. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. He animal excisions is not too bad. I recommend animal harvesting.
Okay.
And the reason that I do that is because it is more accurate and less biased. In other words, when we kill a cow or a steer and carve it up for food,
that's mutilation.
Are we mutilating it? Mm. We don't call it that. We call it butchering the cow, not mutilating the cow.
Mm.
And I can obviously come up with countless examples of that. We are harvesting that meat, and the ETs clearly are harvesting tissues from these animals. And I understand that people don't like that. I understand that particularly animal rights people, who think that humans that do that should be in jail, and I'm sure they're even less sympathetic with extraterrestrials. I'm not unaware of that, those concerns, but we have to get real here. We're dealing with extremely complex issues with enormous implications, and it's important that our language be clear and precise. It's not about offending people. Language is about being accurate, not being ideologically pure.
Right.
Which, of course, is impossible, because whatever ideology you have, there's somebody with the exact opposite ideology.
Mm.
So I have suggested animal harvesting. And also, by the way, they don't just deal with cattle, right? So you got, you know, if a deer or another animal is found with a similar kind of excisions, people are referring to that as cattle mutilation. Well, obviously, that's ridiculous.
Right.
So I'm suggesting animal harvesting. And this is not a big deal. This is not some huge, this is not a serious issue in terms of the activism. I just figure if you're going to look at the lexicon, let's look at it all.
That's right. Steve, unfortunately, we are running out of time. Quickly, where can our listeners go to find out more about your work and about this Congressional Hearing Initiative?
You can find out about the Congressional Hearing Initiative, basics at paradigmresearch.org. You can also see my upcoming European tour, as well as upcoming conferences, including the new conference and the new conference is about to launch in Laughlin, Nevada, in November.
Mm-hmm.
All of this is there, and then the citizen hearing event and a lot of material is at citizenhearing.org, and you can Google and YouTube citizen hearing and see tons about that. So those are the key: citizenhearing.org, paradigmresearchgroup.org. These two sites will keep you busy for months.
Okay. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. And we are not alone. And I hope we can do this again soon, or maybe after the initiative, eh?
Be my pleasure.
Okay. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.fm, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Final frontier. These are the voyages of the functified starship. Functified starship. Functified starship.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Your DJ and commander of the Funkified Starship, Mark Anthony, invites you to tune in to my brand new show. It's called The Planet Funk. That's right. The funkiest show on your radio has moved to Tuesday's afternoons from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. You'll hear the best of old school, classic, and future funk. Let's take a ride to the Planet Funk every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m. on 89.3 WHFR.FM.
Go ahead. Open it.
Thanks. It's a...
baby hazmat suit. It'll help protect your baby.
There are other ways to help protect yourself and your loved ones against certain diseases. Vaccines can help and are not only important for babies and young children, but throughout your entire lifetime. To learn more about vaccines for all stages of life, talk to your healthcare professional today. A public service of Healthy Women and Merck.
Hi, we're Pac 1051 from Allen Park. And you're listening to WHFR, the only station making waves.
Music lovers, have I got news for you. Get a big fat crayon and mark this day on your calendar. Saturday, October 18th. Why, you ask? Well, that's the date for the 7th annual WHFR Record Show here at Henry Ford College. It's the record show that attracts all types of vendors. The out-of-state vendor, vendors that have their own record shops, and even those record collectors that just need to make more space in the house. This year could be the year you sign up and become a vendor. Tables are now available, but they're going fast. If you would like to join us and sell your music or memorabilia, you can call us at 313-845-9676, or you can visit us on the web at whfr.fm/recordshow. The WHFR Record Show is one of the most anticipated shows in the metro area, so don't wait too long. Contact us right now at 313-845-9676 or on the web at whfr.fm/recordshow. The 7th annual WHFR Record Show, Saturday, October 18th, on the campus of Henry Ford College.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Funkified Starship. Funkified Starship.